Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? Hope you had a great weekend. I'm telling you what, regardless of the weekend and everything else, Nick Sciarra, I must say, as much as we miss our compadre, who is killing it in the life of comedy, we have had one hell of a run here the last couple of days with some pretty stellar co-hosts.
The fill-in rotation was solid,
yes.
For sure. No question.
I would think we basically mirror the Astros starting rotation. The rotation that we've put into play, the ERA is low, the results are high. The Afros are non-existent for the most part, except for Billy D. Williams' clone, Nate Griffin. But for the second, because of the fact it's a return engagement, it's like comedy. When you do well, they ask you back. Moochie Norris back again with us today as the Mooch is desperately digging into his backpack looking for I don't know what. But the fact that we had a full weekend of basketball set us up beautifully to have Mooch finish off the farewell tour as Barry returns tomorrow. And we appreciate you being here again, Mooch. You can grab the microphone of your choice.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad I'm here. Glad I'm here again, babe.
I don't know what you're doing, babe, but can we just stop rummaging through the backpack and get down to some business here? How was the weekend?
It was great.
You
it was great.
Coaching.
Yeah, I was coaching, man. TJ Ford basketball. I coach his 13U teams. He has an elite team with his son team on it. So we went undefeated and won the tournament, the Pearland Classic.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's appreciate awesome. It.
Nick was hoping to get a look, but I don't think he can pose as a 13-year-old anymore, although his game might. But he was trying to get in on that squad. But, boy, I'll tell you what, between you and Mario and Mo Taylor, you guys doing a lot of good things for the kids around here, doing the AAU thing and coaching and sponsoring and all those kind of things. That's great to hear, man. I just love people. I told you, it's in your heart, and I appreciate that. But the fact that you give back like that is amazing.
Yeah, man, I love it, man. I had a great time hanging with the kids. I spend all my time with the kids at these tournaments, which is crazy.
Yeah.
In between games, we just sit, laugh, and joke and have fun with them. But it means the world to them, man. And just, you know, some of the other kids from other teams come up and, you know, speak. And, you know, their parents tell them who I am and they want to take pictures and, you know, have dialogue. It's great, man. I'm just glad to be a part of it.
That's why I said Nick fits right in, because that's the kind of thing that he gets into as well. If he could just shave his facial hair, I think he could pose as a 13-year-old and he could play power forward for you.
They're doing it out there, man. Crazy thing about it. A kid that we thought we were going to play against one of the teams in the championship.
Yeah.
He had the full on going, man. The full beard going, man.
Really?
Yeah, it looked like he just made sure they shaved. Looked sure like he just shaved it all the way
sure
down.
You sure he didn't buy a James Harden lookalike kit and slap that thing on with some
because
glue?
You know what? They end up protesting the game before the championship, so we end up playing another team.
He got caught?
Yeah, because somebody said it from the first game. Someone knew who the kid was and said, nah, he's in high school and everything.
Wow.
He had a full going on beard with the gold tee, man. It was crazy.
I'm Nick, like, you're
13?
Out. That's crazy. Nick was looking to try and get a second shot at a second degree and get a full ride somewhere and then go pro, and they catch him like
if
that?
I could get away with it, shoot.
You're going to have to cut it. You got to cut it all the way off. You got to go to the number one.
Dude, I haven't taken a razor to my face in like 10 years. I've had a little...
And you can't grow the Moochie Norris beard?
I cannot.
The flip fro? Instead of on top, it's on the chin now?
I cannot if I wanted to.
Moochie's going to be on the late night TV circuit after a while with the flip fro facial mode where you can chia pet the bottom half after the top decides to go south soaking the beard.
That's good.
We got to get, we'll tweet out a picture too at some point before you get out of here. But
what?
I mean, just because you're in the studio doing the show, people
I'm
going to
wear my glasses
up.
Say what you said to me. No pictures when I got my glasses
on.
That's
right, because I don't do pictures with the glasses on. I don't know what we're doing with these cameras these days. But Nick, how was the weekend?
It's great. Good. It's just one camera on you, too. So the other one is being worked on, I guess, but there's only one camera, so there's only one angle. So even if you don't like it, it's that one angle. I can't change it.
Okay.
Otherwise,
I know you wouldn't anyway, but at the same time, it's not surprising that we have cables hanging from the ceiling. There's always something that's dangling somewhere when we come in here.
It feels like the studio has been put on pause for a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we actually are play and record at the same time that they're pausing. So that's not a combination that works well when you're trying to put together sweet music. When we want play and record and they want pause, unless you got some itchy, scratchy noises and things like that, if you're mixing, otherwise, yeah, we're not doing that. So your weekend was good as well?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't do too much.
Didn't have to cover any games?
Did not. I went to enjoy the Rockets game. Well, not enjoy it, but game three out with some producers and didn't have to cover it. So that was kind of fun instead of just being at the game and not being able to drink. You know how I like to drink and watch games?
Yes.
Too much. But yeah, it was fun. We went out to Dogwood and we watched the game, actually.
That's the one in Midtown.
Absolutely.
That's a good spot.
Is there another Dogwood? Haven't been yet.
It's a real nice spot. It's a real nice spot in Midtown. I know he's been there.
I've been there, but the thing that was surprising to me, because I used to live down there, and I hadn't been down there in a while. And Lisa and I, and I'll get into this, but Lisa and I were down in Midtown this weekend quite a bit, and we were driving through the neighborhood, and all of a sudden, the mainstay spots have all been knocked down. We used to go to a spot, it used to be called the Copa Room. Then it was called a couple other things down the backside of the Red Door. The Red Door was right there next to it. That whole complex has been crushed down except for the Dogwood, right?
Yeah, and I feel like Shot Bar is the only old bar from that era that you're talking about that has survived
is
all
it
those.
Is still there? I know the guys
right
that own
the street.
It, and it's right next to Subway. Yeah, right across the street.
From,
there was a Subway
Dogwood, yeah.
Right there.
It's still there, man.
That's crazy.
Some bars survive a while, kind of like the Roxy downstairs did for, what, like 30 years before it finally closed? Some of them last.
Because we
Shot Bar is one of them.
The Roxy was a Charles Barkley favorite because I was forced to go there far too many times and wasn't
forced
a huge fan.
To go there?
No question.
It was my favorite, too?
We all had a vote, and then at the end of the day, his vote trumped everybody, so we'd all be like, we want to go here, we want to go there, 2826, or we want to go somewhere on Shepherd Plaza, or we want to go here. And Charles would be like, that's cool, we're all going to the Roxy. All right, then we're going to the Roxy.
Here we go.
When you're making little to no money, and you know that the Chuckster is funding your your post-game festivities, you pretty much hang with where he wants to go.
Absolutely, wherever it is.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie about that. You know, the fact that you know you're not paying hundreds of dollars in drinks, probably.
I would go too.
Yeah.
It'd be a no-brainer for me.
Not going to lie. Yeah, so that's crazy. Midtown's totally different. Like, I noticed too, Beyonce's dad had the whole, I forget what it was called, but we used to call it just the Destiny's Child compound. But it was right there down the block from our house, and it was a recording studio. They took an old house and a big open field, and they had events there. They had like an indoor-outdoor spot. All those Texans held events there, all this stuff. All of a sudden, we drive by that. Nothing but BMWs. The BMW place bought it, flattened it, and just parked cars there now. And I'm going, that was worldwide, or it was like Worldwide Productions or Worldwide something, and that was Mr. Knowles' spot for production. And it's gone.
Yeah, you think because there's so limited space in Midtown and downtown that there'd be little change, but no, it's always changing. It's always being rebuilt or knocked down. Or
I was shocked. And then the places you want to go away are still there, like the bus stop. The Greyhound bus stop.
That ain't going nowhere.
Man, that's not going anywhere. There's a lot of spots. I was just like, man, that place survived, but others did not.
Yeah.
And then what is it, Rich's?
Rich's?
Is that still around?
I don't know if it's still around. I was going to ask because I know that that place had survived just about everything and was still going. And that was like an all-night spot. They supposedly stopped selling alcohol at a certain point. But that was, I think their whole slogan was, where all worlds collide. So it was basically like when Montrose meets Midtown and anything goes. But at the same time, people wanted to keep the party going. And as you know, your former equipment guy too, Jay Namath, was a huge fan of Rich's. When all else closes, there was an open door.
J.
So we got a lot to get to in the next 3 hours, and we're just getting started. Our HR&P listener line is open right now, so if you want to join the show, please do. 713-780-3776. You can text that number, you can call that number, or you can reach us on Twitter where it's at iMuchiNorris, at TheProducerNick, at PacManJoel with a K. We'll be talking some hoops and a whole lot more. So if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, give us a shout, give us a tweet, give us a text. and we'll be ready for you through the next 3 hours. Don't go anywhere. All right here, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go. Second segment of the show. We'll take you all the way till 4 and then hand it off to the Blitz, where they'll take you home till 7 right here on ESPN 97.5. Barry is out, which means Mucci Norris is in. Nick and I are still here, and there is plenty to get to in the world. I did want to give you guys a little bit of an update. By the way, License to Chill, thank you very much. Rich's is still there in Midtown, just changed ownership. Okay, so we know that. Going forward, so that's good to know. I mentioned Lisa and I were down there in Midtown all weekend. Last week alone, because they moved the Channel 11 studios to down by U of H, Lisa has, as we all know, is very, very passionate. And Mooch, I know you are too. Nick, you are too. We're all dog people. We're all animal people. And she goes above and beyond. And so after work now, she's been canvassing the neighborhoods and trying to save dogs along the way. And we found homes for about 4 more dogs last week. But then she came upon a special case. And it really was kind of messing with me throughout the last part of last week. They rescued a dog, but the owner surrendered it finally, but wouldn't give up his sister. Found out he's only 4 months old. He basically can't see in one eye, and he was limping around dragging his front leg. And the more Lisa kept telling me about him, the more I was just like thinking, 4 months old, you didn't ask for any of this, and you're getting this hand. There were a lot of people saying, put him down. Just put him down. And it really freaked me out. And so this weekend, Lisa was like, okay, I'm going to leave this up to you. But if you want to meet him and you want to hang with him, I'm fostering him. And we've got our vet that's doing all the medical work on him has given us an open opportunity to go walk him and spend time with him. And so we took him to our vet's down in Montrose. So we took him to the park all weekend and hung out with him. And he went from afraid of his own shadow, didn't want to be around any people. And they said it was night and day after the first time we had spent time with him that he started coming around. And then I was starting to feel better. And then they started telling me, well, you do know that we're going to have to amputate his front leg on Tuesday. And my stomach sank. And then they said, at that time, we'll look at his eye more just to see if we can save that. And I'm going, oh, my God. Well, good news is by Sunday, we had him around Taylor. He's phenomenal with kids. You can tell his disposition's unreal. He started running, and he's actually running, and he wanted to play. And I was just like, oh, my God. And then, you know, I'm sitting there while we're at the park, and I'm closing one eye, and I'm going, how's this going to be? And I know a lot of vets and out at Sugarland, Nick, at the Sugarland specialists that my dog, when he had cancer, we went through. I even reached out to them and said, are we doing the wrong thing here? And they're like, no, Joel, dogs with 3 legs, especially the younger you get them, they just learn to adapt. So as long as they get them at a young age and they learn. And so then I was a little bit more encouraged. Then I checked about the sight, and they said, as long as he's got one good eye, and we still think that other eye might be able to be saved. He started coming around to the point where, and Lisa obviously is so passionate now, she's not going to let him go until we know he's in a good spot. So Lisa took him this morning to another specialist, and they gave him a patch, kind of like for smokers. But the patch is so that they said, the vets that we talked to said, the fact that this dog was happy, we have video of it, the dog was running around happy and everything like that, with the amount of pain he must be in, with the fact that there was no way to save this leg, and he's dangling it, and what his eye is in. And they actually called Lisa the night that we brought him into the vet and thought she was the owner, and they were going to actually want to question her for being arrested for abusing the dog. And she's like, they had to tell the story. And we're like, look, we don't want to go over after the owners, because at least they finally surrendered him. But who knows what he's been through in the first 4 months of his life. So I tweeted his picture. We started a GoFundMe. We've had people calling the vet trying to contribute as well. But his surgery is tomorrow. And we hope that you know, that it's just the arm, they'll take off his leg. He'll be all right. But man, just yesterday afternoon, after we had done this all weekend, and all of a sudden he started wanting to play with Taylor, and he started running. And Lisa and I both stopped for a second and was like, this is what makes things about life cool. Mm-hmm. Because regardless of what he's been through first 4 months of his life, he found a way to be happy. So we're trying to do the right thing. And
so he has not had the leg amputated yet?
Tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And then we're going to foster him. We're going to keep him at our house because he has to be in a really, really kind of safe and you know, stress-free environment. Mm-hmm. And then when he gets to the point where he can start getting up and around, then we've got a couple rescue groups that are helping us try to find the right home for him. But just the dog could not be sweeter. And for all that he's going through, and then when we found out he was that loving and happy and he's in pain. So this patch is going to take away the pain. But like, yeah, I normally don't do this. I put it on Twitter and I put it on Facebook, but I'm like, this is the kind of thing where people are already starting to come through for this guy, but I hope you just give him a good life going forward. But it was crazy, man. I'm thinking, I don't know how people can do that to an animal.
And these owners still have the sister?
They have the sister, and they went back yesterday and again this morning trying to get them to give up the sister, and they're hoping to breed her, and so they will not give her up.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's not some of the people that you shouldn't have dogs.
Shouldn't have dogs.
Because these people from
the
rescue groups go through the neighborhood, and these people are actually holding on to the dogs. They can't afford to, nor do they just don't want to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
So the rescue groups feed them, but they won't surrender them because they're hoping to have puppies that they can sell and do other things. So crazy stuff. That was my weekend. But the fact that it was all made when he got up and started running around, and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, it took your breath away. I was like, because, you know, we got him in a blanket thinking with one leg unusable, he's dragging it. You're like, he doesn't want it. And all of a sudden, he was just so happy to be out and about. He started running around. I was like, man, at least he got video of it. So it was cool.
So where can you find the GoFundMe?
Everything's on at Pac-Man Joel. I just put the GoFundMe. It's not actually GoFundMe, whatever the fundraiser page is. The rescue group set it up for us. But it's on my Twitter account as well as pictures. And I'm going to get Lisa to send me the video that I can post because when you see this little guy and the fact that he doesn't pay any mind to the fact that, you know, he's dragging one of his legs it's pretty amazing. And so I went from feeling really bad to the point where I was like, you know what? He's going to be all right. He's going to make it through this and we'll make sure of it. So it was cool. So there's that.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
That's great. It's beautiful.
All right. So let's get down to some business. First of all, Mucci wants to break down the Astros for us, Nick, because they've won six in a row. And for all of you a week ago, and Barry will be the first one to bring this up tomorrow, I'm sure. But for all of you people that had basically thrown in the towel on the offense and were worried about so many different things, oh, what a difference a week can make. Six in a row, another outstanding performance by a starter as McCullers goes to 3-1. And the Astros sweep the White Sox, outscore them 27-2, and do what they needed to do. The offense broke out, a couple of double-digit offensive outputs, and then a seven spot yesterday. So good things ahead, but now the Angels in town starting tonight. A long homestand, Nick, as you will be, I'm sure, busy double-dipping between Rockets and Astros games. But the Astros hosting the Angels, who are neck and neck with the Astros in the division, and they have been one of the surprises of baseball. So it should be interesting to see what happens with these Astros. But, Mooch, you're a transplant like me, but have you jumped on this Astros bandwagon last year when they started winning?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm always for the home team, wherever I'm at. I'm pretty much rooting for the home team. You know, after them winning the championship, you know, watching them, I just knew it was just a matter of time when he was putting that team together. They did a great job putting the team together. So coming back a year later, yeah, I'm going to get over there and catch some of these games this season.
Oh, it's amazing. And the Yankees are in town next week, so that's going to be big. So this homestand is going to be large for a team that's putting it all together. They're back in first place. They're playing good baseball. So if you guys want to talk baseball at any time, feel free. As Mooch and I can and Nick can get you through all that as well. Just wanted to throw that out there before we get into some playoff basketball, because there was plenty of basketball to be spoken of. Some series are over. Some other series are getting really interesting. And then you got the Rockets. Which we'll get to starting next segment so we get a full segment out of the deal. But the Rockets looking to get a win tonight, try and take command of the series, because right now, I think a lot of people that thought this was a foregone conclusion are starting to worry that this might be a little longer series than what was previously thought about. I wrote about it on SportsMap if you want to check it out, sportsmap.com, but I wrote about how the sense of urgency better start tonight and it better get there in a hurry, because they haven't played good basketball in over almost a month. And that has to be reckoned with and looked at from a Rockets perspective. But overall, the fact of the matter is that this team did not look great on Saturday night. They have not looked like themselves in over a month. And now it's getting to be a pressure cooker as other series are working themselves out. Other teams are getting healthy. And there's a lot to worry about if you're a Rockets fan. Right?
No. Easy.
You think it's easy?
Yeah. I think they'll be okay. Okay. They're the best team in the league for a reason.
Okay, and you keep saying that. And so I'll be the one that sits back in the rafters and waits for the first slip up, and then I'm going to drill you. That's what listeners do around here. I'm just going to join on and pile on. That's what we're going to do. All right, so we're going to continue to roll on. And again, we'll start talking some Rockets. So if you got questions for Mooch or myself or Nick, just get them to us, 713-780-3776. That's the HRNP listener line. We'll make sure you get in, whether it be via text and or via phone call or Twitter. Back with a whole lot more as we're just in hour number one. It's the usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
5 seconds left to play. The horn's going to sound here at Target Center, and the Timberwolves have their first postseason victory since May 29th of 2004. Nearly 14 years since the last Wolves playoff victory. 121-105 is the final over the Rockets here tonight.
It's been a long time, but tomorrow's a perfect opportunity for it. You know, so watched some film, saw things that we just allow happen too easily, and you know, won't happen again. You know, shots are gonna be made, shots are gonna be missed. But I think defensively, you know, as long as our focus level is there every possession, it doesn't matter about the offense. Defensively, it'll be good enough.
So that was first Alan Horton, the voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Timberwolves Radio Network, and then secondly James Harden after the game yesterday, talking about what they have to do and what they've seen getting ready for Game 4. I know one thing, listener who wanted to try and get on my ass about Taj Gibson, you could suck it because you just found out what kind of defender he is based on some of the things he was doing Saturday night. But overall, Mooch, your impressions on Game 3 and what you saw in that game?
They just missed shots. I think they just missed shots. You know, the Minnesota, like you said, Minnesota hadn't been there in a while, so the building was rocking. The guys were playing at a whole nother level. So that was to be expected. I knew the Rockets had their hands full going in there. It was a hostile environment at that time. But I just think, like James said, you know, they just got to make shots and continue to do what they do when things don't go well offensively.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I noticed too, I think I'm like you. I'm like, look, we knew going in how long it had been. So you knew it was going to be a very, very emotional crowd. And you know that, as we say in the league, there's always it's the NBA, so everybody makes a comeback, but it's going to be that first haymaker that was going to be thrown by the home team because of the emotion. The players were going to feed off of that, and the Rockets were going to have to defend against that. But I think the main thing that I keep taking away from in looking at this series to this point is a lot of people are looking past the fact that Minnesota had every chance in the world and a lead in the fourth quarter to win Game 1. If they had won Game 1, there'd be a whole hell of a lot more panic going on in this city. But the fact of the matter is the team still has not played well. They have not played like themselves. And I would say, and you guys have seen it as much, and Nick, you cover it more than anybody, but I would say since they wrapped up the number one seed in the West and the overall best record, and we went through this rest versus rust discussion, they have yet to come to the form that had gotten them and elevated them to that record. They just, whether it be guys in and out of the lineup, whether it be guys thinking there's nothing to play for, now looking at a series where I think Mooch, a lot of the guys seem to, from the get-go, started to think this is a foregone conclusion. We're just going to do what we did in the regular season. We're going to wipe the slate clean of the Timberwolves, get ready for round two. And now all of a sudden, it's like, hey, pad the brakes, people. Let's start paying attention to the fact that you don't want a long series with this team because of the road ahead.
Absolutely, I agree. But this is a different Rockets team. Last year, or the year before, I was actually watching the game, and I sat there and said, the Rockets normally would have lost those games. You know, a game like that against Minnesota in Minnesota, they wouldn't even came back in the game. I think they would have just you know, pretty much gave up and just said they couldn't come back. But like you said, in game one, I don't care what the score is at the end. It's all about wins and losses. So if they win, then I'm happy. But, you know, sometimes it's going to be ugly. But they do a great job of winning the games they're supposed to. And like you said, they beat Minnesota all year this year. So it's kind of hard not to, you know, get to this point and feel like we're just going to do the same thing. I mean, I'm a player. I've been
there. But they got Carl Anthony Towns off, finally.
Right.
But they got something they desperately needed was that inside-outside game and getting their second-best player going and motivated for whatever reason. But that seemed to kind of spur everything else on.
Yeah, I mean, you got 28 from Butler. You got 23 from Teague. And then you get 18 from Carl Anthony Towns. I mean, that's a scary stat line, I think. And we said going into the first round that the Timberwolves may not be a legit number 8 seed, that they might be a lot better than what the seed says. You saw how at the end of the regular season, the Western Conference seeding was just changing rapidly because you never know where, you know, which team was going to fall. The Timberwolves, if they continue to play like that, I think it's going to be very scary for the Rockets. Carl Anthony Towns was a lot more confident. He was even mean-mugging Clint Capella at one point. You got to be scared. They did what they had to do. In the first two games, you were hoping they'd steal at least one of the two games in Minnesota. Game four and game five is very important. Even if they win tonight, I think game five is still very important for them. So, it's going to be interesting to see. And going back to the game of game two, I felt like the third quarter was the difference. You saw the discrepancy there in terms of scoring. But they just could not pick up off of the, you know, they couldn't build any momentum going into the fourth quarter, and that really hurt them. So, yeah, this is a really important game. I would like to see better perform. I'm not necessarily afraid for the Rockets as a team, but I'm concerned about certain performances like a P.J. Tucker or a Ryan Anderson or an Eric Gordon. I just want certain guys to play better. We've seen 2-3 guys not play well, and the Rockets still win a game. I think it's really important for, like, certain role players to play well. That's all.
But they have so many of them. That's what's so great about the team this year. They have so many
They're
of
deep.
Them. So when some guys, you know, two guys don't play well, you got another two that you can throw in there.
Right.
And that's the luxury that the Rockets have this year. That's why they've been so successful. But like you said about Minnesota, with all those guys going, my surprise is Derrick Rose. That's who's been scary.
He's been great.
He's been great off the bench.
Right? But it's almost been every other game. Like, he shot the load in game one.
In game one.
And then was kind of like not existent in game two. But here he came again in game three.
Yeah.
Here's the scary thing, guys. This dawned on me in watching that game Saturday night. All right? We talk about how deep the Rockets are. I think that's why they've been able to cover up for so many shortcomings as the playoffs have started. The one guy that every Rockets fan should be deathly afraid of going forward is Jamal Crawford, because he has killed this team over the years, and he has done nothing to this point. And at some point, and a lot of people have even said, even if it's just for one game, he's going to get that one lightning in a bottle moment where he goes off, and you better be ready for it, and your bench better be ready for it, because that dude, when he gets it going, he's like Lou Williams. You can't stop him if he is making shots.
Yeah, absolutely. And the crazy thing about it, him having that moment could change everything for this team in this series.
And Nick, I'm glad other people are jumping on it, because I was preaching this even during the regular season. I said, look, here's a team that was the 3 seed in the West for more than half the season, 3/4 of the season. Mm-hmm. In March, Jimmy Butler goes down, misses 17 games. They plummet all the way from 3 to having to win on the final game of the regular season just to get in. But think of the first part of that, not the latter. The first part of it was they were a home court advantage team in the West for most of the season. There's too much talent on that team to be an 8 seed. You're seeing the same thing on the other side of the equation with Washington when John Wall went down. This may be the year where both 8 seeds may be as talented or more talented than any 2 8 seeds, maybe in the history of the game. But Minnesota's backing it up now, and at home with the crowd again tonight, it's going to be interesting to see, because I've also said all year long, and Mooch, I'd be interested to get, I've gotten Mario's thoughts on this, Tom Thibodeau's a control freak. So Tom Thibodeau wants to control everything on both ends of the floor, but this is one roster. If you let them play the style of play the Rockets play, I think they'd be a lot better. I think the fact that they already averaged 109 points a game for a team that had to run structure on every offensive possession, if you just let that, Wiggins for sure is a better player, but I think they might be a better offensive team if they just freestyle going up and down the floor.
Absolutely. That's the kind of team that they have. And Thibodeau, we all know Thibodeau's a defensive-minded coach, but he's never been known for the other side of the ball. You know, even when he was with Van Gundy, he controlled the defense. So he has to allow the players he has to play to the best of their ability. Allow them to be open court players. They want to get up and down and play fast. That's the kind of team you're looking at. They're similar to the Rockets, not as many shooters, but they want to play high tempo, up tempo game and fast. They want to play very, very quick, get quick shots, and you know, just force you to have to defend.
Yeah, I mean, if they definitively win this series, it may not be like, I mean definitively like 4-1. Mm-hmm. This may not be a bad thing because we've mentioned it before. This might be a hard road for the Rockets in the playoffs. And I think you and I, Joel, both said they were going to be, like, we predicted them to be, like, number four at the end of the regular season. They end up being number eight. So this is a good team. So if they get through this, I think it'll help them for round two and round three in the event that they pass them. So I think they will.
So where are we on the defensive side of the ball? Because we all know from an offensive side of the ball, we've said this from before the playoffs started, the role players got to make shots. Because the key and the focus, as it well should be for other teams, is going to be Chris Paul and James Harden. P.J. Tucker's not making shots. You know, Ariza has been up and down. Eric Gordon's been basically MIA. And again, on sportsmap.com, I wrote an article about this. And the main thing I said was, some of it is just inconsistency. Some of it's inexcusable. The sixth man of the year, who had a roller coaster regular season, aside from a 15-point outburst in a 20-point blowout, has been non-existent, and that's inexcusable because offensively, once you get by Paul and Harden, he is their most important offensive player because Capella can just fill in at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
They need Gordon to make shots, especially because Anderson's been terrible. I just look at this and I say, if Eric Gordon doesn't start showing up, it may not rear its head now, but in round two and as you get deeper into the playoffs, they're going to have some problems.
Absolutely. He has to play better. He has to. He's that third guy. Like you said, Capella's going to get his things off pick and roll. Everything he gets off pick and roll. There are no inside fees for this team. They basically playing through their guard. So, yes, he has to play better. And not only to just make shots, just make plays. Because he's very good at getting to the basket and creating. He just missed a lot of shots that he would normally make.
But it seems like, to me, Mooch, and you and I have been through these wars over and over again. You look at a guy and you say, hey, look, bottom line is, when you're on fire and you're feeling it, shoot it from 5 feet off the line.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not there, get yourself an easy one. Get to the basket. Get to the free throw line. And then it'll come. But it seems like every time he touches it, it's like a hot potato to get it up in the air. And they're normally 30, 36 feet out. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, hey, let me wait to get the one that I really want to get, which is the corner three, a little shorter. Give me something that gets my rhythm. He's forcing a lot of long shots, and he's not making enough to be able to feel like he's in his rhythm.
Yeah, he has to get closer to the line, or at least, like you said, attack the basket and try to get to the free throw line and maybe create some kind of rhythm, getting a free look at the rim. But he caught a pass one time. I forgot who threw it to him, but he caught a pass and almost caught it at his feet, and he just turned and still shot the three. And I was in awe because right now you're not making. That's a bad shot.
Even if you are to catch a ball out of the flow where you want the ball chest high, waist high even, you can make good with it. But if you got to get down and get low and then your feet are kind of off balance and not centered, your shoulders aren't, it's a tougher shot to make. I think the difficulty level he's putting on himself is causing some of these troubles.
Absolutely. It's self-inflicted.
And what about, and I want to just get real quick, Nick, the other thing, and Dustin, we're going to get to you in a second. The other thing is, from a defensive perspective, is Luke Mbamute that valuable? Because I'm telling you right now, one guy should not make that defense go that badly that quickly. I believe you think yes.
I mean, you have to, that's what he does.
There's four other spots on the floor, and guys are just watching guys blow their doors off. But Derrick Rose is blowing doors.
I know, but sometimes it's just sometimes having a guy that sets that kind of tone for you defensively, it creates that kind of environment.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like Kevin Garnett going to the Celtics. There's no way they would have won without them changing their culture based on how he was.
Yeah.
He changed that team. He talked them into becoming a defensive-minded team, and they played better. They won a championship.
I'm just going to say that Kevin Garnett going to the Celtics shouldn't be on the same parallel as Luke Mbamute going to the Rockets.
I'm just saying the attitude of it. You know, the attitude, because that's all defense is.
Yeah.
We can, you know, I coach now and I play. You can say, oh, do this, do that. You need to be here. You need to be at. But defense is all attitude. That comes from within. That's all heart. That's the one part of this game that I don't care who you are, you got to have heart. You got to have that kind of stubbornness about yourself to play defense.
Yeah, I felt like on quite a few possessions, there was just not enough distance between, like, the defender would just be too close, and then someone like Derrick Rose would be able to pass you, and that shouldn't happen. There is some speed on this T-Wolves team, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like on a lot of the possessions, they were just right up on them, and if they're going to penetrate to the basket, that's not a good position to be in. You kind of want to give them some distance as a defender before just really, really being up in their grill. But you're right. If you have that heart, you're going to be all over them anyway.
Yeah.
you know, and it doesn't really matter. But it's going to be interesting to see what the defense does for him in game tonight's game.
So. Well, you know, at the pro level, I always felt like you can't actually stop a guy one-on-one.
Slow him down.
You know, you slow him down. You try to make all the shots difficult. You do the best you can. Because I remember playing at Allen Iverson one time, and he lit us up for 60-something. And all I could think about was just, you know, harassing him, making him shoot fallaways and difficult shots, because over time, that wears on a guy. So when we're looking at the game, we are – right in front of Teague, knowing he wants to drive every time. And he kept getting to the basket consistently. One time, it looked like a playground move one time. Just nobody moved. And he held the ball out and went and laid it up. And I was kind
of,
you know.
And to our point, getting back to Gordon, once you start making some of those shots, now they start to free stroke and thinking that they're feeling good. Mm. Now you're seeing three balls drop for Butler and Teague, like you said, and Wiggins, and everybody's knocking down three balls, and that's not their strength. But that's what happens when you start free stroking with confidence.
Yep.
Gordon's not doing that because he's not making shots, and he's making them more difficult. That's kind of what we were getting to in this segment. So we're going to wrap this segment up. Dustin, hold tight. We're coming right back and opening it up with you. We'll continue Rockets talking a whole lot more and then breaking down the rest of the playoffs. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. Call, text, hit us on Twitter, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. I see you there. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back on The Usual Suspect. It's Mucha Norris filling in for Barry. He'll be back tomorrow as he wraps up the King of Comedy tour through the South. Nick is here as well, and we're talking some Rockets basketball. I don't know if I agree with this text, Mooch. See what you think. But it says, the problem is Minnesota is far more athletic and quicker, and the Rockets aren't hitting threes. None of our role players can make anything happen because they're too slow. Now, I will say that in Joe Johnson's case, I believe that. But I think Gerald Green's got a lot of quick in his game. I just think that,
he's definitely the most athletic.
And he can shoot you in, he can shoot you out. But there's also a bunch of thinkers on this team. And you realize when you start thinking about it, what we've been saying is getting in their heads too. Like, hey, at some point, whether you play Oklahoma City or a defensive-minded team like Utah, and they are able to try and slow down Paul and Harden. But at some point, the role players are going to have to make shots. And if they don't, it's going to be your demise.
Absolutely. But like we said, they have so many guys that can step in and do some things. We need a few of them just to step up and make some plays, knock down some shots, whatever it is. But they all can't play mediocre. They all can't play that way. The Rockets can't win that way.
Now I feel bad. I see that it was Dustin that had sent that text, and Dustin was also on the phone line, so I guess we covered his question and he hung up. Dustin, if you got another question, you can always call back. Sorry, I wouldn't have read that. I would let you set it yourself. But look, I mean, the thing is, too, Gerald Green, shoot you in, shoot you out. Joe Johnson, nice signing. You took a shot. Didn't work out. Seems like he's fallen off a cliff in terms of where he used to be to where he is now offensively anyway. Mm-hmm. But you look at the rest of the bench and you think Gordon's got to be a guy. You know, and look, they got a double figure, 12 points out of Anderson in one game. They're going to need more of that too. But he's another guy that likes to pull from 40 when he's not red hot. You know, just wait till in the flow. You're going to get plenty of open shots because of those two guys that you're playing with.
Absolutely.
But be patient. Don't just all of a sudden, the first time you touch the ball, if you're 40 feet out, yank it from Galveston. You know, wait till you get closer to the line and shoot it more with confidence than this is long, but I'm open. I better yank it. No, you'll pass up the first one and get an easier one the second time around if you just keep moving the ball.
Absolutely. I was just in the gym earlier this morning. I was talking about that, trying to show someone the difference between being on the line and being off the line.
It's like, huge.
You just don't take that shot unless you're in a groove or you're red hot, like Joe said. But, you know, three is three. So two steps closer right at the line, it's the same shot. We watch those guys.
You don't get an extra half point.
Every shot that they shot was right on the line.
Yeah. You don't get an extra half point for going a couple feet out. So
Nope.
That's just a glory shot.
Gerald Green won't do that, but he will take a bad shot, but he won't take it from 2 or 3 feet out.
Yeah, Gordon does that.
But he is the guy that, but the more than guys, most, that he can catch it at his shoestrings, and it's still going up.
Yeah.
But he makes them more than most because he's been doing it his whole career.
He made that one in the corner going falling out of bounds.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like,
that
was a tough shot. That was a highlight. Because he's so hyper-athletic,
yeah.
He literally squares his shoulders in the air.
Yeah.
Which, because he's blessed with all that athleticism, he can do what Eric Gordon can't, what mm-hmm. Ryan Anderson can't.
Yeah.
That's why it's so essential that if it's a bad pass, keep it moving, and it'll come back to you, get a better look, instead of just feeling so pressed and forced and stressed, like, I got to get this up, I got to get this up.
Yeah.
And then you rush it. So interesting to see how they handle that tonight, because, again, it'll be another hostile crowd there in Minneapolis. Someone texted in and said, I thought this was Clutch City, not Overreact City. The Rockets haven't played good, and they're still up. But they could have been down, sir or ma'am. They could be down 2-1, as we mentioned, but they said the Rockets had one bad defensive game. It took the T-Wolves playing out of their minds. Did you forget game one? Because they didn't exactly stop anybody in game one. Because the guy, as Mucci mentioned, named Derrick Rose, ran roughshod on your entire defense, and he wasn't even supposed to play or factor in the series, let alone the other guys. So it's been more than one game, and you easily could be down 2-1.
Yeah.
You should be thankful that you're not, and you should be thankful that you have enough depth, as you said, Mooch. The team has so much talent. They've been able to overcome it for now. You're not going to overcome it as you start playing better teams.
Oh, absolutely, because they're going to lock into what you do.
But I think that's the advantage. I don't think the Timberwolves are that bad of a team.
I agree.
This might help them going forward in round two and round three. I don't think this is necessarily us overreacting.
Nope.
I just feel like it's pointing out some of the mistakes in game three, and I'm not worried about it. Like, I really believe they're going to get past round one. I'm not that concerned. I'm a Rockets fan, but I'm telling you, I'm just not that concerned, honestly.
Okay. I'm with you. I think we're all just more concerned about how they're playing.
Yeah,
I think
that's what they do and the adjustments that they will make.
My thing is the big picture. Look, I fully expect, and I've said this to you guys throughout the process, I expect them to win this series. I said in five before the series started. But regardless, I expect them to prevail. My thing is the big picture of once you get by this team, you get to one of the top two defensive teams in the league, if it's Utah, who have athleticism all over the place and a guy that protects the rim better than anybody in the league. Or you get a Oklahoma City team that has two guys on the perimeter that if they want to, and that's the key with Westbrook, but if they want to, and Westbrook will be highly motivated by the Harden factor, can take those two guys in Paul and Harden one-on-one and not need a double team, which means the rest of their defenders who are long and athletic can get to everybody else and contest shots. Then you get to Golden State. We haven't even factored that in. And you talk about the longest, most athletic defensive team. Now you're talking about the Warriors. So I'm looking at the big picture for the series ahead, not just the series that we're dealing with right now, and realizing, hey, it's a long road to hoe, but those next two rounds ain't going to be as easy as this to fix the problem.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. That's why you definitely have to, you know, fix that stuff now. But like Harden said, they missed a lot of assignments. They struggled with a lot of shots that they normally make. But I think sometimes with them, they shoot such a high volume of three-pointers and pass up so many layups.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been a difference in the game because Harden started turning the corner, getting to the basket, and they were getting fouled or they were scoring. So I just think they're going to have to do that against this team because they're going to protect that line a little more.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, look, just like you said, Mooch, the one thing that you definitely focus on, if you're a defensive team looking at playing the Rockets in a series, first thing you say is threes and layups. So you know you got to guard the perimeter. So you know you're going to be on that line and you're going to contest those shots. And then if they want to take the twos, let them have them. And if you want to be able to get back on defense, the key is going to be, and Mikhail told me this a long time ago, in the NBA game, it comes down to uneven attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you recover when you're down they're on a four on three break or a 3-on-2 break? How do you recover so that at least you make them have to reset and don't get a layup? And then how do you take advantage and attack when you got a 3-on-2 break, a 4-on-3 break, and make the most of those things? That's what it comes down to a lot of times. Teams know how to guard the Rockets too. They got it all on film. It's just like you said, they have enough talent. The talented players have to step up.
Absolutely. You need them to step up. You can't win. Right, and right now, I just strongly believe they have the deepest bench in the league, and I think that's what's been carrying them all year long. They've been able to insert someone when somebody else wasn't going well, and they come in and play well, knock down shots, a.k.a. Gerald Green.
Yep.
So, you know, I just think that's it. They just have to play well. As long as the bench play well, the Rockets will keep on moving through.
I think the big thing, too, is that you got to take advantage of the time that you're given. You got a chance to put away a team early so you don't have to make it a long series and grind it out and grueling and all those other things. You got to take advantage of it because if they lose the game tonight, it's guaranteed to go six, could go seven very well. You don't want that in the first round when you know that, like I said, there's a long road to hoe. And there's some more physical teams waiting for you.
Absolutely, because you know in that next round, you start logging more and more minutes, too, as well.
No doubt about it. All right, so if you guys want to talk about the Rockets, we can do that next hour as we start the hour number two. We'll start breaking down the rest of the NBA playoffs, talk about some of the things that happened over the weekend. Some surprising in a good way, some crazy in a bad way. Get to all that and a whole lot more. It's Mucci Norrison for Barry. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.